exit. So, if you found a space, if you haven't found a space, you have to come here early. You know, we never charge entrance fees for these talks, but we do charge to go out. No, we don't charge anything. So, this is the first talk of this season. I've been given many talks in many different places, but this evening that somebody asked me to give a talk, they sent a request by email to our admin officer. Can you give a talk about making mistakes and how to deal with making mistakes? Because this gentleman in another part of the world, apparently, he was a lecturer at university and he was he'd given people the examination. He was taking the exam papers back on a bus and he lost them on the bus. They all disappeared and he was paranoid. All my students will have to take the examination again. And he fessed up, he confessed to the people in charge, and they were very kind, and he thought he'd have to face the students. Imagine that you've done, say, an examination, say, a year 12 or something, and you're just told you have to do it all over again because your stupid professor lost the exams. And he felt so guilty. Fortunately, he found it later on. But he was saying, when you make big mistakes in life, how do you deal with those mistakes? And that's the subject of the talk this evening. Now, first of all, when I was young, if you made a mistake, you used to feel terrible about it, you felt guilty about it, and because of that you hid it, and you pretended it never happened, or someone else did the problem for you. That's why in my monastery I always say that if anything goes wrong, blame somebody else, blame the second monk or the third monk. Any praise, it comes here. But, no, that's only joking. But when things make mistakes, how I was trained to deal with mistakes was from my teacher, because when anybody ever made a mistake, he would never scold them. He would never criticize them. Instead, he would laugh. And it was much more fun laughing when people made mistakes than scolding them or criticizing them. And of course, I used to make many mistakes. All the Western monks always made very stupid mistakes. You know, such as, we haven't got them here. If you come to our monastery, we see they have these little spittoons. We sit on the ground, we have our bowl for food, and a spittoon is for the leftovers. You know, or for, you know, just peeling a banana for banana skins. And so somebody saw that, and they put all their food in a spittoon and started eating from that. That's the rubbish bin, stupid. It's not that. And there was another case, if we thought it was very funny. This visitor, this young lady from England, she came to stay with us. And you may know in Asia we have squat toilets. You know the squat toilets? For some Westerners, it's very hard to have a squat toilet, you know, to do that. So we actually made a little device which you put over the squat toilets so you can sit on it and you can do your stuff. So this lady, we hadn't actually put it over the squat toilet. It was just stored in a corner of the room. And we had to clean up the mess afterwards. Even today, true story, before I came here, I'm teaching a retreat at our Jhana Grove. This is why I can't stay after the talk. I have to go back because still teaching a retreat over there. And this afternoon, before I came, someone made me a cup of tea. And, you know, sometimes they ask me, how many sugars do you have in your cup of tea? So put it in a bowl, I can help myself. So they gave me a bowl, I put two sugars in the cup and started drinking. It wasn't sweet enough, so I put another one in. And I realized, this isn't sugar, this is salt. It's disgusting having tea with salt. And that wasn't the end of it. This evening when I came here, you know, just talking with you beforehand, signing books, all the stuff which I do on a Friday night, saying hello to everybody, and it gets really late, you know, just 25 past, still someone to talk to, 27, 28 minutes past. I'm a monk, but I'm also a human being. I have to go to toilet. So I went into the toilet, did my thing, washed my hand like a good monk should. They always say cleanliness is next to holiness. And when I came out, I was just in time, one more second, and our librarian would have locked the door, which means I'd have been stuck inside that room over there, and you've been looking for me, because over there you can't get out. Once it's locked, it's secure. And I'd have been locked inside, no talk this evening. And I, you know, you get inside, you can't shout, and you won't get attention, and you've got all your mobile phones turned off, so I can't ring you. I'd be stuck in there for the whole talk. You'd be looking, where's Ajahn Brahm? Where's Ajahn Brahm? So that I almost got locked inside this evening. So please, before you lock up the room over there, Mahinda, please check that I'm out of the toilet. But whenever there's mistakes like that, you make fun of them and you laugh. Because mistakes, that is the stuff of humor. That when we make mistakes, you know, everybody laughs, and that brings lightness and happiness. So if you have made a mistake, please come and let me know. And I'll write a book to raise funds for something or other, sort of stupid mistakes. Because when we read them, everybody laughs. About the person who went, they went into the garage. They lost one of the caps on the engine. Say, what cap is it? He said, it's a 710 cap. And the garage owner said, 710, what cap is that? Have you worked it out, 710? If you write 710 on a piece of paper, turn it upside down, it says oil. People make stupid mistakes like that, and it's funny. So whenever we made a stupid mistake, our teacher would laugh, which had this wonderful effect. Number two, it meant that you realized when you made mistakes, you made other people happy. It's a very compassionate, lovely thing to do for other people, which means you were relaxed about making mistakes. You didn't try to hide them. You'd tell everybody. And also, it meant that you didn't hide them out of guilt. You know, you owned up. You realized I made a mistake. I said something stupid or did something stupid. Which means you learn from mistakes rather than trying to hide them. And it also means you accept that mistakes are part of life. And in fact, if there were no mistakes, life wouldn't have any meaning anymore. It would be dull and boring and you wouldn't learn a thing. I always say mistakes add the beauty to life. For those of you who read my first book, the first story, The Two Bad Bricks, I made mistakes when I made my first brick wall. Two bricks were crooked, all the rest were perfect. And I could only see those mistakes. I wanted to destroy that wall. It wasn't perfect enough. You know, I wanted to get some dynamite and blow it up. Because everyone who came to our monastery could see my mistakes. And the person who saw those mistakes most of all was myself. And I had nightmares. I'd messed up my first brick wall. And it was only after 3 months of suffering when a person came and said that was a beautiful wall. I thought they were crazy. I thought they were blind. Have you left your glasses in the car? Can't you see there's something wrong there? And that's when they said, I can see the 998 good bricks as well as the bad bricks. It was me who was blind. For 3 months, I could only see my faults, my mistakes. That's what happens when you make a mistake and you don't laugh at it. That's all you ever see are your mistakes. And for 3 months, I couldn't see any other bricks in that wall except my mistakes. Every time I went past there, my eyes went to the mistakes. Every time I thought about it, every time a visitor came, I would volunteer to be the tour guide. Because I'd take them somewhere else so they would never see my mistakes. That's how embarrassed you are when you have mistakes. But when they actually pointed out the mistakes you make in life, please put them in perspective. Two bad bricks and a great wall of 998 or more. But the story had a beautiful ending to it. It's not just that. Because one day at the Cancer Support Association, when you've got cancers, when life is very difficult, sometimes all you can see is the two bad bricks and you get very negative, depressed. And so when I told that story, which is a popular story there, somebody came up to me afterwards. It was a builder. And the builder said, I want to reassure you that even professional bricklayers make mistakes.
But he said, in the building industry, I'll let you into a secret. In the building industry, when we make a mistake, we call it a feature. And we charge our clients an extra $2,000 for it. And that was such a beautiful ending to the story, because that is how we view mistakes. They are features. They make life far more beautiful and interesting. I've been having a lot of success, you know, with the story of the trees over in Bodhinyana. Many people visit, and they just want to have some bit of counseling, a bit of free counseling while the monks are on retreat. I still have to work. And so often I tell the same story about, go and find me the perfect tree in the forest. Go and find one which is straight, with no branches broken off, with only green leaves, no yellow or brown leaves, not leaning to the left or to the right, with no marks or scars on the bark. And if you can find such a tree, you'll be the first ever. Because in our monastery, all the trees are bent and crooked. They've all got branches broken off. They've all got scars on the bark. They are all damaged goods, which is why they are beautiful. Bent, crooked trees are my favorite. Would you like to get a tree and straighten it up so it never had any mistakes in it? Would you like a tree like that in your garden? Or would you like a crooked one, all bent and knobbly? That's the ones I like. And that's the people I like. The ones who are all bent and knobbly and crooked and scarred. The ones with character. And that's what mistakes do to you. They give you character. They make you beautiful. If you're perfect, they're a pain in the you-know-where. So instead, we appreciate what mistakes actually are. We accept them and change our perception of them as part of life, to be embraced, to be laughed with, enjoyed, and also to be grown from. Because when we make mistakes, if we have guilt, if we have anger, all it does is we don't actually understand the mistake. We want to blame someone. No one is to blame. We all make mistakes. I don't know why we do things, but sometimes we all have the right intention. We have the right intention, but it doesn't quite turn out the way we expected it to. And because of that, you know, it's called a mistake. Sometimes we get married, we think they like the guy, and only afterwards we think, oh God, that's a mistake. But that's where you can learn from and grow from and make it even better. Because we learn from the mistakes of life. If we admit them, we can grow from them. And that is how I was taught to deal with mistakes in life, to acknowledge them. And you can only acknowledge them when there's no guilt or anger, no punishments. Because when we punish mistakes, we drive them underground. Whenever there's punishment, then you will never admit the truth, because you get it's more benefits from lying than telling the truth. And this is one of the things which is a mission in my life, is to ask people who have a relationship to at least be honest with each other. They always tell the truth to each other. How can we manage that? There's only one way. If you have amnesty in your relationship, you can tell your partner, darling, as long as you tell me the truth, I will never scold you, punish you, argue with you. Because if that's the case, your partner will hide things from you. They will hide things from you because they're scared of telling you the truth. It will damage things. But if you have amnesty, then the person you live with can come up to you and say some of the embarrassing things they've done, their mistakes. And that's wonderful for them. They can acknowledge it to the person they love, get forgiveness, and find a way so they never have to make that mistake again. And that's especially true with parents, with children.
And I mention this because many years here, you know, you bring your kids, you know, to the Friday evening, Saturdays, bring your kids to monasteries, and, you know, we get to know your kids, the kids get to know the monks, we share jokes together. I told a couple of kids here my latest joke. You haven't heard this before, unless you've been to Serpentine. This was the many years ago in the west of United States, the tribe of Indians called the Comanche. Their leader was called Cochise. And he was very, very old, and soon he would go to the happy hunting ground. He was about to die. But before he was about to die, he wanted to arrange a successor to be the leader of the noble tribe of Comanches. And so he called in his two biggest and fiercest and bravest warriors. One was the famous Geronimo. The other one was called Fallen Rocks. And he asked the two of them, he said, "You are both great warriors and you are smart. You're both more than capable of being chief of the Comanche tribe. And the only way to decide who will succeed me is giving you a test. I want you to go out for 30 days and capture as many buffaloes as you can. And the one who comes back with the most buffalo skins will be the leader, the chief of the great Comanche tribe." So Geronimo and Falling Rocks, they go out in different directions. After 30 days, Geronimo comes back with many, many buffalo skins. Fallen Rocks, 30 days, 31 days, 35 days, he still hasn't returned. And according to their tribal customs, they send out search parties for their missing brave Fallen Rocks. They search everywhere, and they keep on searching. And indeed, even today, they're still searching for him. Because if you go to that part of the United States, you'll see many signs along the side of the road. Watch out for Falling Rocks. See if the jokes got better from the last year?
No.
They got worse. A few people hanging their heads. But anyhow, so if you do make a mistake, you laugh at it like I do. Anyway, so that gives character to life. You laugh at it and you learn from it. And because you learn from it, you grow from it. But I'm talking about the kids who come here because I was told this joke to a couple of kids. Test it out on them, first of all. So they were my guinea pigs. And afterwards, okay, the kids come here, they get to know the monks when they grow up. And the monks and nuns, they become like almost part of their family. So this one girl came to see me one day some years ago, maybe about 17 or 18. She said, "Ajahn Brahm, I need your help." I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "I'm pregnant." That's a big problem for a girl. I said, "Have you told your mum and dad yet?" She said, "No. My dad will kill me when he finds out. That's why I've come to see you. Can you please ask them for me?" So that was my job, you know, to try and tell the parents, "Your daughter's pregnant. You know, please don't kill her. You know, she needs your help. You know, she made a mistake." Like, people do make mistakes in life. But what really shocked me was that she could not tell her parents about a big trouble where she needed her parents more than ever. There are guys who get into trouble with the police because of drugs or something. Your sons. And they will not tell you because they're scared of what you will do if you found out the truth. So they hide it, get into more trouble, more problems, because they're afraid of being honest and admitting their mistakes. So after that experience, I tried here to ask any of you who are parents, let your children know. Now, little darlings, you can tell me anything, and I won't punish you, scold you, shout at you.
as long as you tell me the truth. Because there are times you will make mistakes, big mistakes. And at those times you need mummy and daddy most of all. So don't be afraid. And you've got to make them believe in what you say, that they won't be afraid. They can tell you anything, even stuff which, you know, shocks you, embarrasses you. Because they need you. As we all need someone to understand, you can make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And punishment, scolding, just pushes those mistakes further underground. We don't learn from them. We get into deeper trouble. So, because mistakes are acceptable, they're part of life. And as the monk sitting next to me would tell you, there is a rule in Bodhinyana Monastery that all monks are allowed to make mistakes. You are permitted. Mistakes are not forbidden. Now, when you're allowed to make a mistake, the result is you don't get so tense, you don't get so afraid, which means you don't make so many mistakes. Have you gone to work where you're not allowed to make mistakes, where even a typing error your boss shouts at you? And because you're so paranoid about making mistakes, you're so tense, you make more mistakes. I remember the time when I first got a bicycle as a, say, 7 or 8 year old kid. I was so excited, but you've never ridden a bicycle before, and it's very dangerous. So what I did, I remember very clearly getting on that bicycle and holding those handlebars so tightly that my knuckles went white and my whole body was stiff with fear. And I kept falling off until I learned to relax. And when I relaxed, I had much better control over the handlebars. You know, you could move with the bike when you went round corners. When I was afraid of falling off, I fell off many times. When it was okay to fall off, when it was okay to make a mistake, I didn't fall off at all. This is the problem. When you're afraid of making mistakes, when you're criticized, when you're scolded for making mistakes, you make more mistakes. That's the nature of the human mind. So by telling the monks and our monastery, you're allowed to make mistakes, and we'll laugh at it. Please tell everybody, because it's a good joke. We don't have much entertainment in a monastery. So when a monk makes a mistake, very good one. So we can all enjoy it and have fun. So when you change the attitude, perception of mistakes, number one, you don't make so many. Number two, it's not so negative. And because it's not so negative, and because it's good fun, we learn from it, we grow from it, and there's not this great negativity of anger and guilt. Which a lot of times it just makes our life miserable. So sometimes we get so negative to what we perceive as the mistakes in life that we have to change our attitude towards. And first of all, was it a mistake? Sometimes I think, was that really a mistake? It may have looked like a mistake to one person, but sometimes mistakes turn out to be the best thing in your whole life. How many great inventions have started off as a mistake? I don't know if this was true, but someone once said that, you know, that somebody was making a telephone call, one in the old landlines, and they were so upset they took the phone and threw it through the air at the wall. And they had the idea of the mobile phone. They were riding a bicycle with two wheels and one went flat. So they had the idea of the monocycle, one-wheel bike. Who knows how mistakes are inventions? How many times have you got lost somewhere? You made a mistake and you've got lost, taking the wrong turn and ended up in places where you've never been before, which are brilliant and great. So often in my life, mistakes have led to amazing things. If you don't allow yourself to make mistakes, you do the same old thing all the time, every day. And because you do that, you never learn, you never grow. Your life is boring. So mistakes are really great. I don't know how Picasso learned to paint. I think he was probably in a bad mood and he spilt the paint. by mistake on the canvas, and there we had modern art. There's probably some people who are going to really tell me off afterwards, but that's what it looks like. How many times have you been making a meal and you put the wrong stuff in, you know, the wrong ingredients, and then you got something which is new. You've never had that before. Your new invention, your culinary delight. That's happened before here for monks, because if you come and see the way the monks and nuns eat, we eat all out of one bowl. And sometimes you get some very interesting combinations. I told you many, many times. What did I have today? It was mushy peas was on the mushy peas on cake. Now, most of those combinations don't work. But I remember having ice cream and had some sticky rice, and the ice cream went on the rice and started to melt. Now that is delicious. Next time you have some ice cream, put some rice in it as well, especially the glutinous sticky rice. It's actually delicious. And that comes as a mistake. So when you allow mistakes to happen in your kitchen, it's invention. You get enormous benefits sometimes. So mistakes can turn out to be something wonderful, especially when you lose your way somewhere. It always happens because I have to be driven around. I'm not allowed to drive as a monk. And when people drive, they often lose their way. And I always say, wonderful. Now, when I'm in a different city and you get lost, that's the way I see things I've never seen before. And you see things you've never seen before as well. So I like getting lost. It's a great adventure. You find your way there sooner or later anyway. But you go a different way than you've ever been before. Mistakes are where we see things we never wanted or expected to see. They give life greater meaning and greater depth and greater interest. But sometimes we think, oh, but sometimes, you know, you do get into trouble. Mistakes actually give you a lot of difficulties in life. And sometimes we think, oh, if only if I hadn't have said that. If only if I'd have done something different, it would have been much better. But there's one thing I know about the past. You cannot if the past. You cannot say, if I didn't do that course, I went on another course. If I didn't go out with that boy, if I went out with another boy. If I didn't sort of do that course and I went for another course, my life would have been much better. You don't know. It could have been better, it could have been worse, because you cannot if the past. There's a word in philosophy called ineffable. Have you heard that word before? Ineffable? You know, things like the meaning of the universe is ineffable. That's not a very good word. I could never understand that, so I made a new word, ineffable. The past is ineffable. You cannot if the past. You cannot say, if I got another job instead of another job. If I'd have stayed at home and did my studies instead of going out partying. You cannot say, if, and I said, yes, I would marry you, instead of saying, I'll think about it, and the guy went off with another girl. You cannot say, if, because you don't know what would happen if you did something different. That's why the past being ineffable means you just leave it alone. It's gone. It's finished. Let it go. Any mistakes, remember the mistakes and laugh about them. So, when you can do things like that, this terrible thing about guilt, anger, remorse totally disappears from you. I know I mentioned that briefly during the meditation. People said, no, if you made a mistake in the past, you've got to dwell on it, learn from it. But often in the past, you know, you don't learn from the past. You just torture yourself from the past. The past is not an educational institution. The past is a torture chamber and prison. So if you want to learn anything in life, try and learn it from the present moment. This is the only reality you have. This is where we learn. This is where we grow. This is the school of life, the university of now. That is where we learn the most. So don't dwell on the past, who did what and why they did it. That is why, you know, all the pictures of the past which I have, I always delete them. I always burn them. I throw them away. That wasn't me, was it? Unfortunately, one thing which happened during our rains retreat, you know, during the time we're supposed to be doing nothing, you know, I had my 63rd birthday. They organized a party for me. And they somehow or other, they got these old photos of me when I was very young. You wouldn't believe this. When I was very young, in my 18, 19, 20, I had very long hair. Really big hair. And where my hair stopped, my beard began. We called it in those days the donut look. If you looked in the middle, you could just see my face. It was very practical in the snow of England and the cold weather. You didn't need a hat or a scarf. You had your beard and hair to insulate you. It was very advanced as far as climate control was concerned. But you know what? My mother, you know, such long hair and big beard as people had in those days. My mother, being quite conservative, was always on me, get your hair cut. Come and get your hair cut. Get your hair cut. And you know, finally, I did get my hair cut. And my mother said, that is not what I meant. But all that past which you did, should I have done that? Should I not have done that? You know, you'd look at the past and all the mistakes and the silly things you did in the past. Now that is what I look back on with joy. And in fact, so much so, that every time you go to a funeral service, I love going to funeral services, because when somebody's dead, a lot of times, you know, the family come up, the friends come up with all of the stories of the stupid things they did when they were young. I remember so many funeral services which were so funny. They don't say how great the person was. They say the time when they went to the building site next door and put a bomb in the portable toilet and blew it up. The time they did stupid things, which makes them human. I remember, Jenny, when, you know, your first husband died, Steve, you know, remember, there was a big mistake at that funeral. You remember it? Now, it's my fault, but I'm glad I did this. I told you that in a funeral, you don't have to buy a coffin. You can make your own. That's actually legal, but, you know, you've got certain dimensions. And I don't know, I think one of your friends made this coffin out of thick jarrah. It was so heavy. When it was put on the, you know, the stand, it was the external committal area in Fremantle. You put it on the stand outside, and there's a conveyor belt, you know, which takes it inside. A little glass door opens up, the coffin goes through and closes afterwards. That's what's supposed to happen. But this coffin was so heavy that the poor conveyor belt couldn't manage it. And it was struggling, and the glass door opened and closed right in the middle of the coffin. It was only halfway in, halfway out, jammed. And I remember, do you remember the face of that poor funeral director? It went white, he was quivering, a big mistake. But this lady, you know, that just lost her husband, she jumped up onto the coffin and started pushing it in. And somebody said, you're really trying to get rid of him that much? And somebody else shouted out, say, I remember when he was young, the first car he had, the first day he crashed his car. Typical of Steve, the first day in his coffin, he crashed his coffin as well. That was one of the best funerals I've ever been to. Thank you for inviting me for that. Everything went wrong, and it was great fun. So that's how we deal with mistakes. We don't get angry and upset. We make it a memorable time which you'll never forget. So we don't feel guilty about this, because everyone does make mistakes. Oh, I also remember the time when we did another funeral for a Chinese disciple here.
And please, all you Chinese people, and I know you really want your mum and dad to go out with style, but don't put so much knobs on the outside of the casket. Because they had this burial, and they had so many ornaments on the outside of the coffin, which they stuck on there. It looked really just very, very like a little palace this fellow was being committed to. But when they lowered it into the hole, had so many knobs on the outside, it got stuck halfway down. And there was your coffin. It hadn't got to the bottom. It wasn't to the top. They tried to move it, and it was stuck fast. And I, you know, do some chanting as it was being lowered down, and it hadn't been finished lowering down, so I did the chanting again another time. About 5 times I had to chant while they were trying to dislodge this coffin, which had got stuck halfway down. It was a big mistake. And on the same subject, you know, one of our monks, a good friend, he lives over in Campbelltown, south of Sydney. Before he became a monk, he got a job as a funeral director. You should actually talk to funeral directors. They got such funny stories. It's the nature of their job. The only way they can survive in a job being a funeral director is having a great sense of humor. And he told me once, he was working in Sydney, and there was a death in one of these old apartment blocks, built many years ago. So very narrow stairs, very narrow lift elevator. And people had been living in there, for 30, 40 years. They knew each other. And there was one poor elderly gentleman that died on the top story. They had to collect the corpse. And there was no way they could take the gurney, this little trolley, because it wouldn't fit up the stairs, and it's hard to push a thing up these stairs. And it wouldn't fit in the elevator either. So I thought, what should we do? So I thought the only way is actually these two men in this small elevator on either side, and they held this dead man vertically up with either side. That's the only way they can get him down. And so there they were, these two men dressed in black with this old guy who everybody knew had just passed away in between them. And they hoped for hope that as they went from the top story down to the ground floor, that no one would press a button halfway. Murphy's Law, if it can happen, it does happen. So this elevator, this lift, stopped halfway down. And as the doors opened, there was this little old lady going to the shops. And what she saw was these two men in black with a guy in between she knew had just died. And they said they don't know how this happened. They lost control of the corpse, and the corpse fell right towards this old lady. And they really thought they'd have another customer. Well, what could they do? They left this old lady fainted there. They got the corpse vertical again, rushed down as soon as they could, and one of them took it into the hearse. The other one ran up the stairs to try and resuscitate this old lady. Fortunately, in those days, all he needed to do was give her a cup of tea, and she was fine. Such a shock. It's a great mistake they made, and he wrote about it. Does it make you laugh as well? That's what we do with mistakes. Share them around. And it gives so much joy and happiness. But, sometimes mistakes really do hurt us. You know, that could have killed somebody, but fortunately it worked out okay. What happens if it did kill her? What happens if, you did something and it turns out terrible? If that person had lost those exam forms and lost them forever and people had to redo the exams? What happens if you press a switch and it's the wrong switch and the aircraft goes down? What happens if, you're in charge of something and you just make a tiny mistake and somebody dies? Then how do you feel? There's something really great in Buddhism. Karma is all about intention. What did you really mean to do? And if you didn't mean to hurt anybody or harm, you should never ever feel guilty. I remember hearing a story about early days of mining here in Western Australia. There was one guy working in the mines a long time ago, and his job was to be the explosive guy. So in those days it was dangerous, so dangerous, that he'd just work at nights when everyone else stopped working in this mine. I forget where they were mining. he would go there to the end of the shaft, you know, drill the holes, load the explosives and detonate them when no one else was there for maximum safety. So he was so good at his job, he didn't mind doing that. It's just by himself, nice and quiet, take his time, do it well. And then that would fracture the rock, and in the morning they'd come and sort of dig out the rock for the next day. That was his job. And so he was very, very good at his job, but this one day he got a premonition that something was going wrong. And actually what actually happened was, you know, he checked everything, that, you know, everything was fine, nothing wrong with the explosives. He made these holes in the rock and was about to put the explosives in when he heard something rumbling towards him. Someone on the previous shift had forgot to put the brakes on these big iron trolleys on the rails. And one trolley, you know, solid iron, really big and heavy, was rolling towards him to the end of the shaft. And as it was rolling towards him, he'd done such a good job with these explosives, there was no place to hide, no place to get out. He knew he was going to be crushed by this trolley. And he said what he did was just jump. So the trolley hit him at the legs. And when he, you know, came to, both legs were cut off. And, you know, because someone had made a stupid mistake. And he was there for quite a few hours before the next shift came. He actually survived. And he said it was an amazing experience. He said he can't explain this, but laying there with legs severed, blood pouring out, he survived somehow, I don't know how. He had this wonderful spiritual experience, you know, coming to peace with himself and the whole life. So much so that when this guy who was responsible came to see him and say sorry, he said, no need to say sorry, thank you so much. You know, what you've given me was worth losing those legs, finding peace inside my own heart. Thank you so much. Sometimes the mistakes in life unexpectedly turn out to be amazing things. So if you have been hurt by someone, sometimes it changes your whole life. Sometimes people make a mistake and hurt, and they come to a place like this because some disappointment or tragedy in your life, and it changes your whole life around, and you become such a happy, wonderful person simply because you made a mistake and it led to something very wonderful. It's amazing just how mistakes, when you see the big picture, are just part of your journey. You don't need to feel guilty about them. It's part of life and part of other people's life as well. Forgive, learn and appreciate. The mistakes are part of life. They add the interest to life, the joy to life, and we don't need to always look upon them in such a negative way. And it's amazing when someone does hurt you, when somebody does sort of give you problems and you go up to them afterwards and you say, thank you so much for what you did. Without that, I would have never found out, you know, the peace and happiness of my life. It hurt at the time when, you know, you slept with my wife and we got divorced. That was a terrible thing. But I've learned so much as a result. It's amazing in your life what you think hurt somebody else actually saved their life, actually made life so much more wonderful. I was telling people one of the most... It's amazing, just when we make a mistake, sometimes we exaggerate it out of all proportions. You know, for many years, one of the mistakes I made, which I felt guilty about, I kept on remembering, even in sleep, even when I was a monk, and I felt so terrible about it. As a student, my father was already dead, my mother was poor, so I had to get jobs, any type of jobs during the vacation to make ends meet. And a job I got for one vacation period, I answered in the newspapers, the worst job in the world, selling encyclopedias door to door. I actually did that. And it was children's encyclopedias. And I looked at these children's encyclopedias, they were rubbish. But you know, I needed the money. And so I went door to door the first day trying to sell these stupid encyclopedias. And when I went to one door, you know, I really sort of gave a good marketing ploy. And it was a young couple who had just had their first child. And as I did this marketing spiel, it was like I was convincing them that they would be giving their denying their child a good education if they did not buy these books. It would be proven they never cared for their child. It was just one stage less than child abuse not to buy these books. And they should be psychologically damaged for the rest of their life if they denied this wonderful educational opportunity for their newly born child. And I was so good at this, they bought it. I made my first sale. And as I walked away, that night I hardly slept. I felt so guilty. As I thought of this young couple, they spent all this money on this stupid book, and they probably would not be able to have a proper meal. Their child would not be able to have proper clothes. I exaggerated what I did out of all proportions. I felt so terrible about it, and I never forgot that. For years I remembered that feeling. I resigned the next day. I couldn't do it again. I sold a stupid book for a family who was short of money. And for years I felt so guilty. I thought it was a terrible mistake I made, until I told that story one day sitting here many years ago. And like what happens usually after the talk, you come up and ask questions. And this woman came up straight away. She said, "I have to tell you this." She said, "This is weird, spooky. But when I was a young girl," and she's about the right age, "when I was a young girl, I remember this long-haired student coming to my door and selling my mum and dad this children's encyclopedia. And I love those books. I still have them. I would read those, and they were my favorite books of all time. I don't know if it was you, but it could have been. So don't feel guilty. Thank you for those books." And when they said that, I learned so much from that. To this day, I think it probably was that person. Because that's the way the world works. Karma works. And it comes back to us again and again. That probably was that little girl. For years, I thought I made a big mistake and done something really mean. And it turned out it was the best thing in the world. And I learned so much about guilt. Sometimes we feel guilty for things we don't deserve to feel guilty about. You had the right intention, or you're between a rock and a hard place, you made a choice. Never think of it as a mistake. Always learning opportunity. If it's a silly mistake, share it with other people. It shows you're human, just like the trees. You know, you're not perfect, you don't have to be. Celebrate your imperfections, your character, your two bad bricks in the wall. That's your features. That's what makes life beautiful. And mistakes, don't fear them. Laugh at them, learn from them. When you don't fear them, you hardly make any mistakes at all. In fact, you don't look at mistakes as mistakes. Just expression of being an imperfect person, just like everybody else, and fit to love. Thank you for listening. Very good. That's not the way to do three sadhus. You have forgotten. Try again. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's much better, thank you. So, now we have some questions. We have questions from overseas. And because I have to rush off afterwards, I'm teaching a retreat at Jhana Grove. Won't have an opportunity for people to come up and ask personal questions. We do some questions here, hands up, and then afterwards I rush out. Is there any internet questions?
No.
Okay, questions from the floor. Anyone want to put their hand up for a question? Going, going, going. Oh, thank you very much. Yes, go on.
I'll let this lady go first. Thank you. That's all right.
Yeah.
I think I've got a loud enough voice.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
It's not mistake that we make. It's actually mistake that we perceived. It's something like our great prime minister deciding to go for a war. How do you forgive those sort of mistakes?
Okay, he's gone for a war, our Prime Minister Tony Abbott. You don't know how it turns out. You know, sometimes you say, like, I'm going to get political now, like the Chinese invading Tibet. Was that bad? If that never happened, the Buddhist monks from Tibet would have never gone to the West. So there's always some good which happens, no matter what occurs. You know, sometimes, you know, in a war, the Second World War, you know, that's how my mother and father would meet afterwards. My father moved from Liverpool because, you know, it was just too destroyed to get work.
if there wasn't a war, then my mum and dad would not have met and I would not be here. So sometimes, we know, it's awful that these things happen, but it's part of life. Is it a mistake? Or is it the weird way which life works, which this world evolves? And when at the end of our life we look at it and say, it wasn't as bad as all that. People live, people die. In terrible ways, we try and make the best out of it. But this is the world in which we live. Is it really a mistake? Or is it someone in a position of power between a rock and a hard place? What would you do? Sometimes it's very hard to blame others when we're not faced with the same responsibilities and duties. So we make decisions, we make the most of them, we make it work. There's always something we can learn from this, something we can grow from. You know, what I grew from, because now Australia has decided to send jets to fight the Islamic State. Now on Monday morning, early 1 o'clock, I'm flying to London. And I was just wondering, what would happen if for some emergency my plane would have to land in Syria? I'm white man, I'm a monk, prime target to be kidnapped and have my head taken off. But I've already got a plan for that. What I'm going to do is my robe, I'm going to just put a slit in it here, cut a slit in it here, and it'll be my burqa. And then I'll be able to go into Syria, walk wherever I want, because I'm wearing a burqa. Okay, it's brown and not black, but that must be okay. So that's my plan, in case I have to land in Syria somewhere. So that's why you can always make something out of what you've got. Any other question to get a silly answer from me again? Any other question? Okay. Okay, very good. Please excuse me for as soon as the retreat is over, flying all over the place. Ajahn Sujata will be here next week, and Ajahn Sujata again, and I'll be back on the 31st. You've got to share me around so I can hide in my burqa in the streets of London in case I go to Islamic areas. Very good. So let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha now.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivadami Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami